And another week's gone by. I say that every week, because every week another week goes by. It's funny that, isn't it? It's one of those strange philosophical cyclic mysteries of our time. Before I get into bogged down and on your philosophical questioning, etc., I would like to tell you that you're actually listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. These are 1001 Songs were, as it happened, selected by Toby Creswell, who is an Australian music journalist. He edited the Rolling Stone in the early 90s, and he's not really meaning to say, when he says 1001, the greatest songs, he's not saying the greatest songs of all time at all. He's actually contradicts himself in his foreword here, because in his foreword he says, this is a book about 1001 songs. There's no number one, there's no canon. Some of these songs are better than others, each has its own qualities. These are 1001 songs that will enrich your life and broaden your palate. Some of these songs are terrible. John Lennon's Imagine, in my opinion, is pretentious and insincere, but I know I'm in the minority there. So, as such, he was not talking about the 1001 greatest songs, but the 1001 songs that he thought were most influential to the 20th century. His first one this week is The Offspring and Come Out and Play. Now, this song was released in 1994. The Offspring were arguably the best of the SoCal punks of the 90s because they had the least sense of humour. I mean, they at least had a sense of humour. It's always a very good thing, having a sense of humour. They also had some lyrically interesting takes on alienation, teenage wasteland, and the state of the nation. If their sound wasn't as dark as many other punks, they still had convincing riffs, and on this track from their breakthrough smash album, Come Out and Play, had an absolutely killer guitar riff backing up the vocal hook. You've Got to Keep Them Separated is the long... You Got to Keep Them Separated, as I believe they intonate it on the actual song there. The song is a satiric take on the teenage gun violence that doesn't evade the issue, but doesn't get bogged down in self-pity. Although it's not as cool as most punks, The Offspring were considerably more hardcore, releasing their albums on an indie label and offering their music on the internet free. Singer Dexter Holland and guitarist Kevin Noodles, Warsaman bassist Greg Kreisel, and drummer Ron Welty maintained a consistent dedication to rock. Despite 6 years of indifference from the business and the fan, the group had a DIY ethic that stood them in good stead after Come Out and Play made them stars. Come Out and Play, ladies and gentlemen, by The Offspring.
Gotta keep them separated. Separated.
Hey!
And then you're disrespecting me.
Keep them
all. You gotta keep them separated.
Hey, hey! Don't pay no mind. We're already cheating. Won't be doing any tidy on. Hey, hey! Come on and play!
Separated.
Hey! Now you're talking back to me.
separated. Separated. Hey, and you're disrespecting me. Check him out. Gotta keep them separated.
The Offspring there, and Come Out and Play from 1994. You're listening to Waiheke Radio. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. Now, the next song that Mr. Cresswell has here for your listening pleasure is All Shook Up by Elvis Presley. And that, in case you didn't know, was from 1957. Otis Blackwell was inspired to pen this lyric by an excited bottle of carbonated soft drink. According to legend, Blackwell's publisher came to his Brill Building office shaking a can of soft drink and said, "You can write about anything. Now, write about this!" The song was intentionally recorded by the now long-forgotten David Hill. Must look him up, actually. Maybe find a few trivia facts about him, yes. You know, for all your pub quizzes. After the success of Don't Be Cruel, all Blackwell's output, including the slightly second-hand, went to Presley, who gave this hillbilly hiccuping treatment. The percussion sound is said to be Elvis slapping the back of his acoustic guitar. Recorded in Hollywood on the 12th day of January in 1957, Elvis was at the peak of his powers. He was running from television appearances with Ed Sullivan to recording sessions for him, soundtracks, and his own sides as well. In the years of 1956 to 1957, he recorded 10 number one singles. All Shook Up was the number one song of 1957. The song was his biggest hit to that point, and it is possibly his most raw rock and roll performance ever. All Shook Up by Elvis.
Well, bless my soul, but what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, my hands are shaking and my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on my own two feet. Who do you think of when you have such luck? I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, please don't ask me what's on my mind. I'm a little mixed up, but I feel fine. When I'm near the girl that I love best, my heart beats so it scares me to death. When she touches my hand, what a chill I got. Her lips are like a volcano that's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. My tongue gets tied when I try to speak. My insides shake like a leaf on a tree. There's only one cure for this body of mine. That's to have that girl and her love so fine. She touched my hand and what a chill I got. Her lips are like a volcano that's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah. I'm all shook up.
And as Mr. Criswell said, that thwack, 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 etc. sound was Elvis slapping the back of his acoustic guitar. Speaking of Mr. Criswell, he actually wrote a book called 1001 Songs, The Greatest Songs of All Time. It's actually a bit of an obscure rarity, as a matter of fact. I mean, I'd never heard of it until quite recently, as a matter of fact. But I decided to do a radio show about it. And in case you hadn't noticed already, this is that radio show. It's funny how these things take place, isn't it? Oh, no. Now, anyway, the whole point of the radio show is that that there is going to be a next song. And the next song in this case is from 1969. It's Nico and Frozen Warnings. It's a bit sort of... I've always thought this was a bit sort of demonic music-ish, you know, sort of music you... there was this brilliant quote I heard recently that said, either heaven or hell has its own background music. Now, which one you say has its own background music said a lot about you. Have I mentioned this on my show before? But either way, yes, I have, actually, now I come to think of it. It's a very relevant quote for a music show. But this, I think, is sort of more the sort of background music you might be hearing in hell. Or perhaps for a nice antithesis, they might do it in heaven. But either way, it's fairly extreme. It's Frozen Warnings by Nico. And it was here on her second album, The Marble Index, that Nico found her voice. She had attempted to be a girl singer with the wafflish style of Marianne Faithfull, but with little commercial success. 2 years later, she was teamed up with John Cale and for the first time produced an album's worth of her own songs. Often described as European, well, she is, she's from Germany. Nico's work was sparse, minimal, elegantly gothic and haunting. If some of those qualities were contradictory, then so be it. Nico found herself in a record deal with Elektra. The title of the sophomore album came from a poem by Wordsworth. It was appropriate. The title of the album is The Marble Index, if you haven't picked up on that already. It's The Marble Index, which is based on a poem by Wordsworth, as I was saying before, because it was appropriate for a record that was definitely poetic in every sense. Nico wrote her tunes on the harmonium, a less than colourful instrument that doesn't lend itself to group playing. Oh, I don't know. I mean, for years, well, months anyway, Trevor had on his promo for his Celtic show. He had music for a newfound harmonium, you know, etc. But then, actually, come to think of it, that's probably about the only ensemble piece I can actually think of bring to hand on harmonium. Most of it's just, you know, church hymns, etc., etc., and so forth. But anyway, harmonium, I've got to find the harmonium in the paragraph. That's the problem with reading out of a book, is that you often lose your place, you know. But harmonium, less than colourful instrument, blah, 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 blah. According to John Cale, it is not exactly in tune with itself, nor with anything else than notes were in the cracks. Nonetheless, Cale recorded and mixed the album in 4 days. Cale's viola on this track is some of his best work. We had only 4 days to make it, but luckily Jack Holtzman at Elektra really understood that there was a very powerful sense of style involved here, said Cale. It wasn't just throwing notes around, you know. I haven't got the Welsh accent quite right, so bear with me. Only got one paragraph to go. These songs just spoke for themselves. You didn't have to know that they came from this heavenly creature. Just as she'd done on the Velvet Underground and Nico, the singer put a new tone into music. This is Nico on her own here, and Frozen Warning.
Midnight winds are landing at the end. The story
talk about fingernails on a blackboard. That was Nico and Frozen Warnings from 1969. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, a 107.4 and 88.3 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Australian music journalist Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. Now... Oh, what do we do now? I always forget this bit, you know? I get all geared up and then, you know... Everything But the Girl. That's what we do now. Everything But the Girl from 1988. I don't want to talk about it. Now, interesting thing. Not very interesting thing, actually, come to think of it. But one thing. This is Everything But the Girl. Before there. I mean, we did have an Everything But the Girl track a couple of weeks ago, if I remember rightly. That was one of their sort of slightly dance-ish. Personally, I tend to think of it as cafe music, you know. Sort of, have a flat white with that, so type music. But growing up on Waiheke Island, where they play that sort of music in cafes. But here, this is before they got into the cafe music scene, as I like to call it. They're sort of more acoustic here in 1988 on their album Idlewild. Tracy Thorn and Ben Watts have had an odd career negotiating the demands of the marketplace and their wandering muse. They started out as a folk duo. In colleges, went rock for a while and moved into laid-back jazz like a literate said. Thorn has an intimate, plaintive voice, and Ben Watt plays delicate, sophisticated melodies. Their admirers include Bono and Prince. They're not quite folk and not quite rock, but with a bit of both and some jazz thrown in there as well. The songs have a range from generalized romance to strict politics and the documenting of the dissolution of their own romantic relationship. On Idlewild, they absorb the lessons of the past and move on. With their own songs intriguing and warrant close attention, the remake of Danny Whitten's ballad is breathtaking. Originally written for his band Crazy Horse's debut LP, Rod Stewart also did a great version of this song, but Everything But the Girl strips this song right back to its elements. Thorn's vocal is dry and exhausted, but the purity of her tone and phrasing give the track an emotional net. Watt's jazz-tinged backing is similarly minimal, but it's spaces in the pieces left out that really anchor the emotional message. Everything But the Girl, and I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
everything but the girl and I don't want to talk about it. You're listening to Waiheke Radio 107.4 and 88.3 FM. This is 1001 Songs, 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, the secrets behind them. I'm Seth, and these songs were selected by Toby Cresswell. The next song that Toby Cresswell has selected is Beth by Kiss. Got that out of the way? Yes. Yes, rather very pleasant evening there, isn't it? Yes, yes. Yes. One of the first power ballads, Beth, is the story of the eternal struggle between a man's band and his girlfriend. Drummer Peter Criss wrote this song in 1971 when he was in a band called Chelsea with Stan Pendridge. The inspiration being a mate's nagging girlfriend interrupting their rehearsals. She was the world's greatest hypochondriac, Chris said in a 1994 interview recalling the woman in question. She was always sick, and she was continually calling up and interrupting our rehearsals. So after a month, 6 weeks of this going on, we'd know it had to be her when the phone rang, so we'd start writing down what Michael was saying to Beck. And he would literally say, Beck, I heard you were calling, but I can't come home right now. He'd be pissed off, you know? And me and the boys are playing here, and we've got to get the sound together. Give me another hour, and I'll be there. The song lay dormant until the sessions of Destroyer. Originally titled Beck, Gene Simmons suggested to change in the title would avoid confusion with guitarist Jeff Beck, and suggested that Chris submit the song for the next album. Producer Bob Ezrin made some minor changes and orchestrated the song with monumental string arrangements performed by the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. Originally, the flip side to Detroit Rock City, a radio station started playing the track, and it was eventually issued as a single in its own right and became a Kiss's first top 10 single. That's Beth by Kiss. That's actually quite good, you know. Da 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 da. I personally quite like that. That's just me personally, but you know, I mean, I think Toby Criswell actually secretly likes this song as well. But don't mention that. That was Kiss and Beth. And now we have Fine Young Cannibals and A Good Thing from 1989. Appears on the Raw and the Cook album. In a drunken moment, guitarist Andy Koch described the Fine Young Cannibals' second album as 30 years worth of pop music. No, they're not from there. 30 years worth of pop music in 30 minutes. He wasn't, however, too far off the market. There are all kinds of influence bubbling under the Fine Young Cannibals. Reggae, ska, dance music, R&B, and sometimes rock. Good Thing is a perfect Fine Young Cannibals track, just built around a riff and groove which the three cannibals, Cox, bassist Dave Steele, and the singer Roland Gift, ride for all it's worth. Everything is here. New Orleans piano that resolves into a 60s garage band sound, 50s rock and roll, and doo-wop harmonies. The gospel hand claps, the twangy surf guitar, and the futuristic metronome drum machine. Gift had an extraordinary voice, like a souped-up Nat King Cole, which complemented the spiky ideas of his ex-speak colleagues with a Tamla Motown Marvin Gaye tone. We don't need anything other than a good song and a good beat, said Steele. This is their song, The Fine Young Cannibals, and A Good Thing.
Yeah.
Another very good track there. That was Fine Young Cannibals and Good Thing. A lot of very good tracks tonight, actually, from Mr. Cresswell. But, actually, you'll probably disagree with me. You'll probably think they're all shit or something. But, you decide. You decide. Actually, another quite a good track coming up. Buffalo Springfield and Mr. Soul from 1968. The first time Neil Young borrows a Rolling Stones tune to write one of his own. While recovering in hospital following an epileptic attack, Young adapts the riff of I Can't Get No Satisfaction for a cynical and wary look at the music business. Young was just starting to get his career as a guitarist in Buffalo Springfield, and already he was worried about selling out. As it turns out, the pressure to perform Mr. Soul on a variety TV show caused a major rift in the tempestuous five-piece outfit. Tempestuous. It's a very good word. You can tell that he's a writer. You know, well, of course he's a writer. He's written a book, hasn't he? But, you know, a word like tempestuous. Tempestuous weather outside. That's just my opinion, by the way, once again. Mr. Soul was first recorded while the group was on tour in New York. Otis Redding came to the session with a view to cutting the track himself, but Young was reluctant to part with the song and refused permission. The song was eventually recut and included on the second Springfield album. Its toughness and symptomatic of one of the directions that Young was heading in as the group fell apart. There are a lot of problems happening with the Springfield, he told journalist Nick Kent. There are a lot of distractions, too. Groupies, drugs, then there are all these people, and they're always hanging around, giving you grass, trying to steal your hippie clothes. I never knew what these people wanted, and there were so many of them, not to mention all the women, all of the clubs, the places to go, all the things to do. I just remember being haunted suddenly by this whole obsession with, how do I fit in here? Do I like this? Do I like this? Mr. Soul by Buffalo Springfield. Of Neil Young there. Buffalo Springfield and Mr. Soul. You're listening to Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all times, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell. This next song I've got for you here is Hugh Muscala and Grazing in the Grass. Hugh Muscala is one of the leading lights for South African music. He took up the trumpet and flugelhorn at the age of 14, mastering bebop, cool jazz, and pop styles. Being black in an apartheid era meant that opportunities in South Africa were limited, and the climate of oppression didn't lend itself to jazz. In the late 50s, he was at the centre of South African music. In 1961, he fled to Europe with his wife, singer Miriam Makeba. Muscala was soon the centre of European and American jazz, mixing with the likes of Harry Belafonte, Dizzy Gillespie, and John Dankworth. Muscala continued to move through a range of genres, bringing his peculiar rhythm and particular rhythmic style and warm emotive notes. In 1968, he had a major pop hit with Grazing in the Grass, and his fusion ensembles were much in demand, especially with rock audiences. Muscala has continued to play jazz and world music, including a time with Fela Kuti. He also assisted Paul Simon on the Graceland project. Grazing in the Grass began as Mr. Bull No. 5, which were recorded by Muscala in Zambia during the 60s, hence Grazing. The mood suggests a deeper version of the light jazz of Herb Albert and Herbie Mann. Muscala, however, brought a more soulful and complex ambience to the record. According to legend, Muscala finished his session and was filling in time and tape with Grazing. It was knocked off in one take. Executive producer Russ Reagan heard the potential in the song, issued it as a single, and his instincts were right, and the song crossed over from the jazz to the pop charts, and it sold 4 million copies. This is Hugh Muscala, ladies and gentlemen, and Grazing in the Grass. Was Hugh Muscala and Grazing in the Grass. Very very nice jazz melody, I thought there. That it was from 1968. You're listening to Waiheke Radio here on 107.4 FM and 88.3 FM. This is 1001 songs, the great songs of all time. Like I say, it's not really the great songs of all time, though. It's, you know, most influential songs of the 20th century, but that doesn't quite have the same ring to it. I'm Seth Titley Jones, and this is The Cure. And close to me, from 1985, Robert Smith had been through the ringer a couple of times by the mid-80s. His group, The Cure, started out as a moody existentialist art rockers who were immediately successful despite the limited musical talent. Smith struggled with his success through career-defeating albums and years of drug and alcohol abuse. However, the pop songs kept creeping out. In an attempt to demystify The Cure, he had penned Let's Go to Bed, and inexplicably, the track was a hit in the US. In the early 1985, Smith resolved to get happy. In 2 weeks, he wrote the new album, Head on the Door. It was recorded with an unashamed delight for hooks and catchy melodies. Smith and the group's video director, Tim Pope, cut some of the song's most musical film clips. I think The Cure really started again at this point, said Smith. I felt like being in the Beatles. I wanted everything to make a substantial Strawberry Fields-style pop music, and everything should be really catchy. We're in a very strange position that we were able to play really crass pop songs, and yet people still accept that I can sing about issues with far greater emotional depth and take it seriously. This is Close to Me by The Cure. Oh, The Cure and Close to Me from 1985. You're listening to Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, and I'm Seth. Steve Earland, I Still Carry You Round, is from 1997 and appears on the album El Corazon, which I'm no expert, but if I remember rightly from my Spanish lessons a few years ago. El Corazon means the heart in Spanish. Steve Earle took a bad boy image a little too far. A heroin addiction that lasted more than 20 years and 5 marriages is followed by a crack habit that finally landed the Texan singer-songwriter in jail. Prior to his sentence, he had been in a revolving door of arrests and court appearances that was crippling his career, and in between, the lawyer and the drug dealers sucking away his time and creativity. Suddenly, in 1995, after the jail sentence looked too real, Earl quit drugs. He returned to performing and writing, first as a solo, then with various outfits. El Corazon, the heart. Oh, I was right! Ha ha ha. Yes, ha 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 ha. Very smug now. Ha 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 ha. Very smug indeed. El Corazon was the third post-rehab album. To cross the entire spectrum of Earl's work. Well, you understand that my writer's block came when I he said. From about $750 to $800 a day worth of writer's block, my drug habit reached a point where there wasn't any time or energy to do anything else. So now that I don't have to find hundreds of dollars worth of drugs just to get up in the morning, it's amazing. I feel like I have all the time and energy in the world. I write something every day. And the only thing that scares writers worse than ex-wives is a blank piece of paper. With El Corazon, I finally managed to write an entire album without the devil in one song, and I'm very proud of that. I just wanted to see if I could do it. Earl re-embraced country music styles, especially bluegrass. For one song, he teams up with Del McCourty, a bluegrass band leader. Well into his 70s at the time, he wrote his notes for the album. I wrote the songs specifically to have something to play with the Del McCourty band. They just are the best bluegrass outfit in the business right now. Dale is the best tenor, Ronnie is the best mandolin player, and Rob plays banjo like no one else. The bluegrass is the original alternative country music. After I retire, I'm going to buy a bass and play bluegrass festivals. That's Steve Earle, and I Still Carry You Round.
soul. And if the road, no matter where I'm at, I still carry you around. I still carry you around. Everywhere I travel now, no matter how I try to put you down,
Steve Earle and I Still Carry You Around from 1990-something. I can't remember exactly because I actually can't. The book's all the way over there and I'm all the way over here. And, you know, just with the one thing and another. And also with the one and thing and another thing. Oh, I'm doing this fake laugh far too much. I really must stop it. It's actually... nearly 9 o'clock, so I'm going to have to sign off. And being New Zealand Music Month and everything, I'm going to leave you here with a very local track. This is Paul Haynes. Now, Paul Haynes is a local Waiheke artist who is unsigned, you see. But having said that, he has given Waiheke Radio his demo for our listening pleasure and yours. This demo is what I'm going to leave you with here tonight. So until next week, until next Monday, and don't forget the repeat of this show on at 2 o'clock this Saturday. But until next Monday, I will be back the same time, the same channel, Waiheke Radio 107.4 and 88.3 at 8 p.m. right after Trevor's Celtic Meets Country show.